24-06, open space.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. The topic of open space, the commission may remember from the joint Planning and Zoning Commission, County Council, Development Design Initiative Workshop that was held on September 21st of last year. So this was one of the items identified in that joint workshop, and the ordinance that is before you today is a product of those discussions that the commission members had with County Council and the presentation that Mr. Lawson provided as part of those discussions. And if I just jump forward, the ordinance, it's a relatively short ordinance, it's an eight-page ordinance, but a lot of that is due to the duplication that exists within Chapter 99 and Chapter 115. And the open space is actually defined in two places, and much of the length of the current ordinance is to address that in both places. So what the ordinance seeks to do primarily is to change the definition of open space, and I've highlighted lines 55 through 83 to just summarize some of the main changes. And what this first section does is it lists the uses that are included in the definition of open space. And if you look at the changes that are being made, is that play areas still continue to be included in the definition of open space, but playgrounds and tot lots are not included in the definition of open space. And that's specifically because the difference between play areas and playgrounds and tot lots is that they're improved. They have buildings and structures, which reduces their openness. It's contrary to the very goal of what open space is. And what this, which section also seeks to do is that it changes references, previous references or existing references to tidal and non-tidal wetlands, and renames them to resources, which aligns with the resource buffer ordinance and the changes in definitions in code that have already been adopted by County Council. It also removes sidewalks from the definition and removes spray irrigation areas. And you can see that the additional text is placed in green, and what's being removed is in red. And if I jump to the next section, the clicker wants to work. The next section, lines 86 through 105, this lists the uses that are not included in the definition of open space. And it expands the list of uses that are not included, and now explicitly excluded will be clubhouses, community buildings, recreational facilities, including swim pools, game courts, tot lots, playgrounds, pavilions, and other similar facilities such as patios and impervious recreational community facilities that are now specifically excluded. And again, with the previous definition, the focus and intent on there is on physical man-made improvements and structures that by definition are not open. And also excluded now, if you look at that final lines 104 to 105, now excluded in this, in the proposed revisions are medians, boulevards, parking islands, and other often narrow and unusable strips of land that are being excluded. And we've seen cases and examples where large areas of thin, narrow strips of land are included in the open space definition. And cumulatively, that can be a large area of land that's not significantly usable. So I actually have some examples to show you on my next slide. So if I jump back one. So this is actually an example of a multifamily dwelling structure that was approved. This is Vineyards on the north side of Route 9. This is one of the buildings that's approved there. And I've just highlighted some of the areas that would no longer, under this ordinance, wouldn't be counted. Like parking islands, I've highlighted there. Curbs and sidewalk areas and those strips of landscaping alongside those. There's an example there of a relatively small boulevard or median. But you can imagine some boulevards and medians that the commission and council are quite long and significantly can cumulatively have a lot of area. And they're not designed to be walked within. They often have buildings, improvements and structures or infrastructure within them or street lighting that renders them less open. So they would be removed from the calculation. So looking at the clubhouses and amenities and improved amenities in particular, staff actually went into some subdivisions. So these are all 99 subdivisions that have been through the Planning and Zoning Commission, and various states have approval and implementation. And we have Brentwood, and we have estates of Bridgewater and Terra Hill and North Star. And that is an application that is currently pending, but it has a subdivision element that we wanted to look at due to its size. And if you look at the table, you can see that we plotted the open space in acres, and then we looked at the percentage of the overall site that open space acreage reflects. And then what we looked at and calculated, we went into the drawings and measured the amenity area within those subdivisions, and we subtracted it from the total amount. And if you look at Brentwood, for example, well, the example on the screen is actually the estates of Bridgewater. If you look at the total number of acres, there's over 100 acres of open space in that development, representing approximately 69% open space of the overall site. The amenities, very quick calculation, came up as 2.17 acres, which we subtracted, which takes you down to 98.45 acres, and it reduced the overall percentage from 69% to 67.7%. And the reason with this exercise, and we wanted to replicate this across other subdivisions, is that the drop in open space associated with the change in definition was right. not mathematically significant. And then jumping to another example, just to, I'm not going to go through all of these, Mr. Chairman, just to provide an overview. We looked at Brentwood, which is a larger development, and when the Commission saw this, it was formerly known as Coal Lakes. This is a development on Robinsonville Road. We chose this one because of its size. So it has 77.92 acres of open space, representing 50% of the site. We looked at the amenities and calculated all the area around the amenities, including sports courts. There's a dog park in there, there's a trail system, and the amenities, the clubhouse and the pool. We totaled all of it as 3.302 acres, which would, if that was not counted in the definition of open space, that would reduce down to 74.618 acres, which overall reduced the open space percentage from 50% down to 48.98%, which we wanted to show you that it's mathematically it's not significant. Not a lot, yeah. And it certainly wouldn't put the development below the minimum requirement as outlined in the subdivision code. So. Jumping ahead real quick, we wanted to look at multifamily. So what this ordinance does in lines 220 to 221, for multifamily and townhouse developments, the ordinance adds greater precision as to how open space is to be calculated. And historically, the Commission has seen site plans where the footprint of a multifamily building is shown, and then for the purposes of open space, and for calculation of open space, it's as if you step out of the back door of a townhouse and then you're in open space, which is not how open space is practically experienced by those living in the dwellings. Often you have residential paraphernalia and people use those areas. So what the ordinance seeks to do is it adds greater precision and it removes the land area within an area that's 40 feet from the front, 10 feet from the side, and 10 feet from the rear of any multifamily or townhouse. So it actually it specifies that there is a rectangular area around that, and I can illustrate that in the code. We actually drew onto the example. This is actually an example. This is Governors, and these are the townhome developments as part of that. If you look at those areas, these are the areas around the townhomes that would not be counted towards open space. It does not affect the separation distances that are required by code. There's still with townhouse developments, there's a requirement that they actually provide an aggregate yard area to the front and rear. So this aligns with that practice by clarifying that the open space cannot be counted right up to the perimeter of the footprint of the buildings.
I would just add on that, this is sort of, we wanted to make multifamily dwellings consistent with single family dwellings. And this is a good example. Another one would have been like Saddle Ridge or some of the other ones where they're single family condominiums, so they're not lots. You know, if it was a subdivision, the person's 7,500 square foot lot would not count towards open space. But if it's treated as a condominium, a multifamily, there's no lot, so the open space runs right up to the footprint of the building. So we just wanted to have an apples to apples open space calculation.
Yeah.
That's all. And so the numbers were essentially just same setback numbers, that you get on a lot size. So.
And that's my presentation, Mr. Chairman. It's an 8-page ordinance. I did not propose to go line by line, but if you have any questions, we're happy to answer them.
Questions, anybody?
No questions.
All right, sir.
Thank you.
You'll take a seat nearby. We'll let these other folks have at it. Okay, who wants to be first this time?
We will receive.
Okay.
Good evening. For the record, again, Stephen Sinclair, Millsboro, Delaware, and I am here on behalf of the Sussex Preservation Coalition. As a forester, I've never really liked the term open space, because open connotates something that's uncovered, unprotected, bare, and space could be defined as a void and free. But truly open space, or what I perhaps would better describe as green space, is filled with all sorts of things. Trees, forests, fields, meadows, wildlife habitat, wetlands, and other valuable natural resources, not to mention a place where people can enjoy and recreate. And what we've attempted to do with our recommended revisions in the proposed ordinance on open space is to better describe and define what open space is filled with. Those important natural resources deserve recognition and protection. We've also proposed a number of incentives for developers that developers could employ to increase what's allowed as open space, and finally looked at the required percentages of open space based on housing density. And we did the same thing that we did previously. We've looked at the proposed ordinance and the recommended changes that we have, and those are in red. I'm not going to go through every single one because we've been here a long time. But I will make a couple things. Some specific changes, word changes and additions. In line 50, we talk about adding the word undisturbed as places set aside that are unnecessarily impacted by construction equipment lose the ability for storm water and rain retention and other hydrological and vegetative features. So by putting that word undisturbed, those open spaces are going to be truly of value. Line 51 through 52, we're trying to tie into the criteria that are identified in Chapter 99. So that's what's a great thing about looking at this open space, because you can see how it combines in with Chapter 99. In line 64, the proposed changes recognizes that stormwater and wet ponds are probably here to stay, and more often are the preferred stormwater management practices. But to make these stormwater wet ponds beneficial from a natural resource standpoint, putting some conditions in order to make them eligible for open space so that they would have a buffer, they would have a certain grade, they would have access for recreational use. So we're going to have wet ponds, we're going to have stormwater ponds. Maybe we allow them as open space if they meet certain criteria. Okay. Yeah, there we go. Sorry. Also under that, we talk about landscape buffers and berms, the value in promoting that open landscape and suitable areas. So we're feeling is if a developer is going to create these berms, these kind of screens within the development that are beneficial and still have public access, that those should be eligible for open space. Another area is under 105. As a means of increasing tree canopy and developments, because we all know the social, economic, and environmental benefits of having trees and a tree canopy in our communities. But oftentimes, those aren't being planted. So what we're suggesting is under the line at 105 that we would allow curbs and sidewalks within a right-of-way to be included in open space if they were planted with trees on a 30-foot spacing. And I'm sure you've driven around developments here in Sussex County where you've seen that green belt that's all it is grass. And I could see where that wouldn't be of much public use. But if it has trees on it, you're getting public benefits from that. And I think that could qualify for open space. Finally, let's look at minimum percentages of open space. What is the current average open space percentage on developments over the past 5 years? I know Jill Hicks from the Sussex Preservation Coalition did quite a bit of a study, and developers continually to exceed the amount of open space presently required, and Jamie showed that in one of his examples just a few minutes ago. Recognizing this, as well as the benefits derived by livable communities, we are recommending increasing those minimums to the following. And for going from 10% to 20%, 6 to 10, 15 to 30, and over 10 up to 45%. And I should mention that under cluster development, currently the open space requirement is 30%. Finally, open space determination really needs to be a deliberative process. That areas set aside for open space should be functional for ecological and recreational values, not what is just left over after the development infrastructure and house sites have been identified, because that's currently what takes place. That open space is what's not been built on. And it should be a more deliberative process where they look at the natural features and work that development around them. And this is an opportunity, I think, to do that, and changes proposed in Chapter 91 will hopefully steer this process for a better future. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. Who's next?
Looks like be this out of the room now. I'll save the introduction on the record. Not here to talk about density or property rights, but it does indirectly come into that conversation just a hair. No different than division comes into this when we talk about numerators, denominators, and quotients. I'll use the word cost, housing units, and price as we come together. So with Mr. Whitehouse's explanation, I kind of had a better understanding again of where the open space direction was coming from. Again, still talking about second order effect and the why now. So I kind of took an approach slightly different into that land area is land area. Land area application is a land area, be it 10 acres, 100 acres, 1,000 acres. Every piece of land has to be accounted for. So when we start taking pieces of this land that can't be counted as this, can't be counted as this, someone has to absorb that. And sometimes that H goes down, that C may go up, which means that price may go up. And when we get third order effects, how does the open space start to affect the cluster subdivision, which the gentleman had mentioned as well, but more importantly, the Sussex County rental program. I'm working on one of those applications right now. 50% is required to be open space. Based on how this is working out, that application is now dead. I can't meet that based on certain criteria to make that work. So that becomes a third and fourth order effect of these changes in the definition. How does that start to affect those other programs and how that works? No different than if you were to poll everybody in this room today, you would get 10, 12 different definitions of open space, what that really means. So for many others, it's about the recreation component of it. Some of it is about the passive component and the openness that Jane was referring to. So talking about the active amenities not counting as open space, I look at subdivisions like the Peninsula that has extremely large clubhouse, post office, multi-purpose buildings, the pools, everything in the parking lot, all that comes on the table, can't be counted as open space, but yet that is where the community goes year-round and has many different things. Matter of fact, I was there little 2 weeks ago presenting on behalf of the Land Trust about what the Land Trust is doing with the Peninsula easement, and it was amazing to see the turnout that they had as far as the communities. That doesn't count as open space anymore because that's where this definition goes.
Just Ring, I got to ask you, you know, that's one to me that I think everybody in the room would say, that a building is not open space. You know, if the house isn't, why would the clubhouse
be? But it goes back to my point is, so again, that's what I'm trying to figure out, what is the open space? Because a lot of people look at the recreation.
I'm on the show for about 3 minutes.
Space.
I'll be right back.
And so, again, that's why I took it as a different approach, Mr. Robinson, is because without having a conversation, recreational areas is still open space. It's a recreational active amenity. No different than a playground, it's an active amenity. It's still part of the open space. It's still part of that calculation, and again, without knowing this backtrack, so I was just bringing this point into, and what I'm getting to at the end of this thing is I've reviewed many different codes and do lots of different, you know, subdivisions, everything else. I'm not a fan of using percentages when it comes to open space. Because again, 10% of 10 acres is different than 10% of 100 acres, of 400 acres. So when you look at other ordinances, and I'm not a fan of comparing the county to any other jurisdiction, any other county, I've always believed Sussex County, but I thought in this case I'd come with a different approach to think about. And that is City of Dover, Towns of Frederica, Towns of Cheswold, City of Milford, Kent County do not talk about open space in the realm that Mr. Whitehouse just described. They all talk about the recreational area on a square footage basis. It is definitive. It is not subjective. It is very clear because a lot of the residents, again, are there for the recreational open space and the passive, and I don't disagree that sometimes it is the leftover land, but again, we have to account for that land because someone's got to pay to mow that grass and everything else. So I was, again, coming to it from the recreational component of that's what a lot of people want is the recreation. And so that's where I came up with a square footage basis. So my recommendation was not going to look at open space percentages, look at it from the passive standpoint, which is what I believe Mr. Whitehouse is gearing towards, more the passive side than the active side, because the active side is where your playgrounds are, your buildings.
Differently, I think because we sort of all worked at it, it was open space versus structures, you know, and you can have active and passive open space, you know, like if they're, you know, play areas or just meadows where you can be out or paths or whatever, you know, but it was pulling out the structural amenities, you know, because the one thing that the county's always said is we're not going to dictate, I mean, unless something changes, what sort of amenities you should have, because that is driven by the market and, you know, the housing prices, what type of development you're going to do, whatever, you know, that was sort of a separate conversation unrelated to this.
Right. And all, again, all I was saying was, is the other jurisdictions, they have a square footage component per dwelling unit. And then it's a minimum size, minimum square footage, and then the developer says, here's what I'm proposing, and then you leave the other component out of it. So my recommendation was going to be something that Kent County does, where you eliminate the open space percentage, right? And then within the growth area of the county, it's the recreation area I'm speaking to, okay? Understand, it's different than what Mr. Whitehouse proposed. I'm just saying it's what I'm coming to the county with, is, because generally we're focused a lot on the recreational component of these things, is it's 300 square feet per dwelling unit when you're in a growth area.
Now, just so, because I'm not familiar enough with it, is that 300 square feet of amenities or 300 square feet of open
land area?
Land area.
And I'll get back to that other question here in a minute. And then if you're outside the growth area, then it's 600 square feet per dwelling unit for obviously outside the growth area. Those requirements don't have restrictions on impervious area within that, because it, again, is the recreational value, because that's what you're trying to provide, is the recreation for the owner's use. Leaving, again, that's the way they view things, is the undeveloped portion is a separate component. So again, I came from a different end without knowing, again, you read words without knowing explanation, you're kind of unsure. So I focus this from a recreation standpoint, because that's what a lot of the people buying their communities for, is more of the recreation value of those type of amenities. And yeah, the passive component is just as much recreation, but the more of the recreation of the playgrounds, I call them the unorganized players part of it, right? The pools, the clubhouses, that's what people buying their communities for. That's why I kind of focus more on a recreation side. Again, it's definitive. It is, you know, X times Y equals this. Here's my land area. Who cares if I do that at 75% impervious? These are the recreation values. The other land still becomes part of that open space. Again, that was me coming to the table, and that's just my thought of a very simple way of calculating it. Again, makes it easy for the staff to verify, easy for us to calculate, easy for you to verify, easy for anyone interested in application to verify. So that's kind of how I approach this from that standpoint. Again, different, Mr. Robson, than what you and Mr. Whitehouse came up with, but my perspective on how I think is a very simplistic way of resolving at least that component of a recreational standpoint.
And I'll just say, just in response to that, just so you all know the history of kind of the ordinances, you know, again, the idea was to take what we currently have, not toss it out and rewrite it, you know, because right now we have what's included and what's excluded. So we just sort of looked at what's included and what's excluded. How can we make that better? And those are the changes. So, I mean, just so you know the background.
Yep, understood.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, who's next? Apparently, we have an established order here.
John Horner again on behalf of the Home Builders Association. I am going to delve into the density issue. As most everyone is aware, in this country, county and state, we have a housing affordability crisis. And every single economist is lockstep that it is a supply and demand issue. And that imbalance, as well as the increased cost to build housing, is what is contributing to that problem. Advocates across the country, as well as economists, in order to address that problem, are advocating for increased density. They're not advocating for increased density everywhere. They're advocating for increased density in areas where it's appropriate, which is where growth is, where jobs are, and where infrastructure improvements are planned. It's important to note, though, that permitted density is not the same as buildable density. Simply because you have 2 units to the acre does not mean you can get 2 units to the acre on a given site. It's also important to note that this definition of open space applies not just to the large subdivisions, Brentwood and Bridgewater that were shown on the plans. It also applies to the SCRP ordinance. It also applies to smaller condo subdivisions. It applies to everything that uses that open space definition. So while you saw a de minimis impact on a large parcel, right, where you're never going to have a peninsula or some master plan community like that, you're not going to have 50 acres of clubhouse. You're going to have 2 to 3 and even your largest communities. So when you lose that from the calculation, it's de minimis. Now, if you have a 10-unit subdivision and you lose a tot lot and you lose those types of things, it starts to be a lot more impactful. If you have an SCRP program project where it is just the building on a small pad with a 50% open space requirement, with this definition of open space, I'd argue, and Ring even said it himself with the project he's specifically working on, you cannot build that project. So, you know, if the goal here is to have open space be truly open, I understand that, but we should not be doing it in a way that is going to reduce buildable density. If the true goal of the open space is to do that, then I would suggest that there should be other changes made to allow us to still obtain that buildable density. Let's look at bulk standards. Let's look at minimum lot sizes. Nobody should be opposed to that if the goal is to just have the open space, right? The density should be able to be buildable. What is interesting is that most of the people that are advocating for changes in the definition of open space are people that are not going to be using this open space. I can't walk into a community I don't live in and go walking around their neighborhood. I can't, walk into their clubhouse. I can't go into their pools. And so really the ultimate goal of these groups that are advocating for this is to reduce density. I know this. They've told me this. They do not want density. They want less people here. They want less cars on the road. But as members of this community, we need density and we need housing in order to address this crisis. What I would argue is that we should consider alternative definitions for the open space to allow amenities and clubhouses to be included as some form of passive versus active open space. I think if you totally remove them, you are going to have situations where communities will have their amenities removed. And maybe that's what the market wants, maybe that's what the market demands, but I would argue that's not something that we should encourage. We should not encourage massive amenities that are going to take up 50% of the open space with a buildable footprint of a building or courts or impermeable surface. So we should have it and say, if this is the percentage of open space that we want in a project, then no more than X percent of that can be active open space. We shouldn't exclude those types of things because they're good for the community, they're good for the residents that are in there. The people that are actually using that open space want those things. And we should not do things that discourage those from being built. And I believe that's it. Thank you.
Right, sir. Thank you. Next.
For the record, Kenneth Yusuf. The only item that I had was there was a section that required a minimum of basically a half an acre of open space minimum. I know that there are a lot of communities that we design. Just to throw out an example, like a Bay Forest Club, communities that a lot of people feel are highly regarded and desirable for the residents there, but also from the land planning and land design standpoint, where you have small pocket parks. So instead of consolidating your open space in a few really large areas and in a large project that may be remote from where the people are, what we oftentimes try to do in our design is to have a lot of small areas dispersed throughout the community that are places for neighbors to gather. I know I do that in my own community, and where you don't necessarily need almost a half an acre of area to have an activated area with a small seating area. I've seen some projects with fire pits that are only in 15,000 square feet that are tucked in a corner of open space. It's positive for the community and it brings people together. I don't think we should penalize and restrict the design of communities to require these much larger open spaces. I think working on making sure that there's pedestrian connections to the open spaces and encourage walkable communities and that type of thing, I think you can do that without restricting the size or having a minimum size. That's all I have.
All right, sir. Thank you. Okay, Mr. Hutt, you're going to pass? Wow. Pretty daggone scary. Okay. All right, commissioners, any comments, questions? Any summary statement, counselor, or are we good?
No, I think we're good from what we said. So what we'll do is, you know, take into account all, well, I am saying a summary statement now, after I said it wouldn't. We'll take into account all of the comments that have been made. It's not going to go back on, I don't think, next week, because we have a meeting next week, so it'll go back on the first meeting in December.
All right. Well,
that'll give council time to.
Okay. We'll close the public hearing. We invite you to remain with us the rest of the evening, see if we make a decision. But I think the man just told you, so.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks for coming.